This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Keeping the Faith. I'm Kyle Kroha, the longtime technical director for this show. I'm also the producer and voice of the occasional severe weather update that you may hear on the weekend, as our weather dictates. But today, Steve has graciously allowed me the opportunity to interview a guest for whom I have long lobbied to have on our show. And I thank Steve for the privilege of bringing Carrie Newcomer to Keeping the Faith. And I also thank Mike Pritchard for taking my place at our radio board so that I may do so. So thank you, Steve. And thank you, Mike. We are graced indeed to have Carrie Newcomer with us today on Keeping the Faith. Carrie, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Oh, terrific. I understand that you're home now here in southern Indiana today.
Oh, yes, for today.
I know we were talking about Lake Michigan and a few other forays there, but you're at home in Indiana today, yes?
Yes.
Oh, terrific. Well, you know, before we get started, I want to invite folks to join the conversation. Our call-in lines are open at 217-333-9455 or toll-free at 800-222-9455. That is 217-333-WILL or toll-free at 800-222-WILL. Many listeners of Keeping the Faith are well aware of you, Carrie, but I want to make sure that all are gathered in as we begin, so I'm going to give a little bit of a biography here that I'm sure you're quite familiar. From your website, Carrie Newcomer's music has always explored the intersection of the spiritual and the daily, the sacred and the ordinary. Over the course of her career, she's become a prominent voice for progressive spirituality, social justice, and interfaith dialogue. Critics have got a lot of great things to say about Carrie. She's been described as a soaring songstress by Billboard, a prairie mystic by the Boston Globe, and Rolling Stone magazine has declared that she asks all the right questions. And author Barbara Kingsolver wrote, she's a poet, storyteller, snake charmer, good neighbor, friend and lover, minister of the wide-eyed gospel of hope and grace. And finally, BustedHalo.com says, when a singer-songwriter like Carrie Newcomer includes the names of theologians, religious leaders, and famous authors among her influences, clearly the traditional categories no longer apply. Newcomer is not destroying old categories so much as stretching herself and her music across categories and helping them make sense. As a committed Quaker, Newcomer forges a connection between her faith, her sense of social justice, and her songwriting that is unique. She does have several critically acclaimed albums, including her most recent, which is Kindred Spirits, and that's available at the store at www.carrienewcomer.com. She has traveled extensively across the nation and Europe. She's toured with our own Alison Krauss and has included trips to the Middle East, Kenya, and India in her life itinerary. Throughout her career, she has created several presentations and PBS specials and worked extensively with beloved authors, scientists, and progressive theologians, including Parker Palmer, Barbara Kingsolver, Jill Bolte Taylor, Philip Gully, Jim Wallace, Marcus Borg, Brian McLaren, and Scott Russell Sanders. She also presents several workshops in collaboration and on her own on topics ranging from art, activism, writing, songwriting, and vocation. Carrie, these are some pretty glowing accomplishments and reviews from the good folks out there. But what say you? How would you describe your niche?
Oh, well, gosh, well, first of all, thank you for having me on the program, and it's great to be with you today. You know, primarily I'm a songwriter, and I write songs, and but I guess what might be unusual about me is that I do write with a spiritual current, but that crosses over between the secular and the sacred.
I see. You know, and that's, I think, one of the things that makes you incredibly accessible across just a broad range of spirituality and spiritual traditions. You know, I would like to, you know, obviously you're a singer-songwriter, so why don't we have a sample of, you have so many wonderful songs.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. You really grace us with that, and it's a real gift to us. I picked Gathering of Spirits as one of the first songs that we would look at. And is there anything you'd like to say about this song as an introduction?
Well, you know, songs, it's originally on an album called The Gathering of Spirits that came out in 2002, and some songs are new and they're close to your heart, and then other songs become old friends, and they keep taking on new meaning as you continue to sing them. And I think The Gathering of Spirits is probably one of those songs.
Okay, and I believe Alison. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step over there. I believe Alison Krauss is also on this.
Yes, Alison Krauss is on it, and of course she sounds like an angel.
Of course, of course.
She always does.
Okay, well, Gathering of Spirits.
Let it go, my love, my truest. Let it sail on silver wings. A life's a twinkling, that's for certain. But it's such a fine thing. There's a gathering of spirits. There's a festival of friends. And we'll take up where we left off. We all meet again. I can't explain it. I couldn't if I tried. How the only things we carry are the things we hold inside, like a day in the open, like the love we won't forget, like the laughter that we started, and it hasn't died down yet. Oh, let it go, my love, my truest. Let it sail on silver wings. Life's a twinkling, that's for certain, but it's such a fine thing. There's a gathering of spirits. There's a festival of friends. And we'll take up where we left off when we all meet again. Oh yeah, now didn't we? And don't we make it shine? Aren't we standing in the center of something rare and fine? Some glow like embers, like a light through colored glass. Some give it all in one great flame, throwing kisses as they pass. Oh, let it go, my love, my truest. Let it sail on silver wings. Life's a twinkling, that's for certain, but it's such a fine thing. There's a gathering of spirits. There's a festival of friends. And we'll take up where we left off when we all meet again. But there's heaven in our midst, and we're never really all that far from those we love, and this weight out in the water. There's a glory all around, and the wise say there's a thousand ways to kneel and kiss the ground. Oh, let it go, my love, my truest. Let it sail on silver wings. Life's a twinkling, that's for certain, but it's such a fine thing. There's a gathering of spirits. There's a festival of friends. And we'll take up where we left off when we all meet again. And we'll take up where we left off when we all meet again.
Was The Gathering of Spirits by Carrie Newcomer. My name is Kyle Kroha. We're here on Keeping the Faith with Carrie Newcomer today. And Carrie, we could spend an entire hour just on your music and your message. And, you know, we're going to have samplings of your music as we go along. But you've done so many other things beyond the singer-songwriter realm. You are known for your missions, messages, and different trips. You've gone around the world on behalf of different organizations and causes in the past. I know you've been to India and Kenya. But before we get to that, and I do want to get to India because there's so many good things going on there, and Kenya too, but I was wondering if we could just touch base about your most recent trip. As I understand it, you just returned from the Middle East. And could you tell us a little bit about that?
I just returned from a trip to Israel and Palestine, and I spent a couple weeks there working with organizations dedicated to nonviolent conflict resolution, particularly arts organization, bringing people together, working particularly with children, writing songs and giving concerts. But that's what I was doing there.
Oh, terrific, terrific. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I know that as I said, you've got a lot of different trips and experiences, and it all adds to sort of the fabric of our lives, so to speak. I'm really intrigued about your trips to India. When I looked at going from Indiana to India, it's more than just dropping the last two letters off of Indiana. So how did you get from Indiana to India, if you don't mind sharing with us?
Well, it was an interesting story. I was there for two different organizations. I was invited to come to the international school, the embassy school in Delhi, New Delhi, to work with Mike Kemmerer, and they were doing a week of creating works of art based on the topics of peace and justice. So I came and worked with the students for a week. And then for the rest of the month, I worked with the American Center, which is a division of the American Embassy in India, which brings American culture, and I did concerts for Indian audiences, particularly. And then I worked in the afternoons with organizations that were, you know, working in community and public service, particularly groups that young Indians were involved with. And it was just an amazing experience, just life-changing. And I'm just really grateful I had a chance to do that. And then while I was there, I had the incredible honor of meeting Amjad Ali Khan.
Yes.
And his two sons, Ayan Ali Khan and Aman Ali Khan, the preeminent sarod masters of the world. It's like, wow. and if you're not sure what a sarod is, it's for in the Western world, we're familiar with the sitar, which I would compare to, in the classical world, the violin. The sarod would be more like the cello.
Okay, sure.
Uh-huh. And I met these amazing, incredible musicians, and we ended up creating an album of music together called Everything is Everywhere. And that came out 2 years ago, and so I did a second tour in India to release that album and celebrate it.
Okay, and that album, I believe, is also released as a benefit album for the Interfaith Hunger Initiative?
Yes, the album, the idea behind the album was to try to create a work of art, a musical work of art that addressed where music came from, the common thread that pulls between us. So decided to release it as a interfaith hunger project, something that would, the Interfaith Hunger Initiative serves people here in the United States, but also abroad, and it seemed like a wonderful organization to dedicate the album to.
Oh, absolutely. And I've downloaded this album. I have so enjoyed it. I have a waterproof MP3 player, and I've been swimming laps to actually the next song, which is just terrific. I want to introduce this song. This is Breathe In, Breathe Out off of the Kindred Spirits version of the album. And Mike, do we have that queued up? Super. Okay, Kindred Spirits.
To love so many things, to fly on beautiful wax wings. Breathe it in, breathe it out, let it go. Breathe in, breathe out, let it go. Breathe in, breathe out, let it go. Breathe in, breathe out, let it go.
Okay, that was Breathe In, Breathe Out. It was actually originally from the Everything is Everywhere album, but that happened to be the Kindred Spirits version. We did kind of shorten that a little bit just for the sake of time. Now, again, that was a benefit album for the Interfaith Hunger Initiative. That is available at www.carrienewcomer.com, should you like to pick up that album. Now, as I understand, this organization also supported, and again, I could be wrong here, but I believe that the Interfaith Hunger Initiative also supported some programs that you visited when you went to Kenya, yes?
Yeah, last summer I did go to Kenya. Some of their programs, the Interfaith Hunger Initiative has programs in Kenya. And so I went last summer in June, and went and visited schools and programs and, again, worked with kids and sang with kids. And also I was visiting the Empath program, which is just an amazing medical and AIDS program there in Kenya that's affiliated with Indiana IU Medical School. So it was really quite an amazing trip. And, you know, it's interesting, in the last, you know, 6-7 years I've been doing these different trips to different parts of the country, and one of the things that keeps coming back to me that really has impressed me in these travels is, you know, first, that I love the differences, you know, that I'm so thrilled by how we're different. Cultures are rich, and they're unique, and thank goodness we are not all exactly the same, you know?
Indeed.
But at the same time, I'm so powerfully moved by the threads that pull between us, the things that we recognize, you know, anywhere we go. You know, if you sing a song about family, if you sing a song about love or grief or struggle, if you sing a song about hope, particularly about hope, it's immediately recognizable anywhere you go. It's really an amazing thing to appreciate so much how we're different, and at the same time, love where we're connected.
Oh, that's terrific. You know, Carrie, we do have a caller, I believe, caller on line one from Champaign. Go ahead.
Hi. So, Carrie, welcome back to see you, even if it's by long distance.
Well, hi.
Hi. And, Kyle, I'm really glad to hear you on the air. I thank you for your faithful service every weekend on the board.
Oh, well, thank you.
I got to meet you in spring of 2009 when you worked for Address Canvas, and I was Mariam's boss.
Oh, my word. Hello. How are you? I know who this is. Hi.
Hi. And Carrie might know who this is, too. I don't know if she recognizes. But anyway, I, too, have been lobbying to have Carrie here, but so far it hasn't worked. But I'm still working on people. And I'm really honored, Carrie, to have you represent our country in the Middle East, and I eagerly await the album that's slated to follow. Meanwhile, everyone should run out and to their nearest store, that is to say your website, and buy your latest album, Kindred Spirits.
Oh, thank you.
And since I had 15 of the 19 songs on earlier CDs, I thought I didn't need to buy it for myself, so I bought it for a dear college friend.
There you go.
Bless your heart. Thank you.
Well, the story isn't over. Then I played it all the way home from that concert and writing workshop in November, and I had to order another one to keep me honest before I could send it to her, and she's now a fan, too. So my only complaint is that you didn't include Prayers of Air and Smoke on it from Everything is Everywhere, which I think is my favorite all-time song of yours, though that's hard to choose. But it does play on your website, which you very generously make available to everyone for free to listen to. And when I can't sleep, I turn it on at a low volume, and it sings me to sleep. And then when I wake up in the night, it's still singing because it loops continuously. So that's great. So I have a couple of questions. You have said that you wrote a short story, Betty's Diner, and I wanted to know if that's available in published form apart from the character sketches that come in the booklet with the CD.
Ah, well, thank you for asking. For folks who aren't familiar with the album, it's called Regulars and Refugees, And there was a song called Betty's Diner, which is about a diner and the collection of people who frequent the diner, and a waitress named Miranda. And no, the short story is not published anywhere, but it became a song. And then, you know, as you know, the song had all these characters in it, and the characters weren't done with me yet. So I ended up writing all these little vignettes and short stories that became the song, the songs that are on the album, Regulars and Refugees. And in the booklet, some of those little vignettes and little short stories are part of the package. But I can say that I have been writing a play with a wonderful playwright and sound designer. His name is Richard K. Thomas. And, you know, we've done our first reading of it a little over a year ago, and we've redone another draft of it, and now we're kind of looking to workshop it. So there is a play based on Betty's Diner that's in the works. That if you're interested, you know, of course, if there is a workshop or a performance, it'll be on my website, and I'll be sure to announce it. But thanks for asking about it. Those characters, they I lived with them for about a year as I was writing the album, and it's been very nice to revisit them again with the play and get to know them again.
Well, thank you, Cole.
And is the stage production of Wilderness Plots available as a DVD? I've seen little snippets.
Yes, it is.
Good.
There was a stage. Wilderness Plots was, for folks who are not familiar with it, it's five songwriters, and we wrote songs based on the short stories of Scott Russell Sanders, just a fabulous environmental writer from Indiana. And the little book of short stories is called Wilderness Plots. And all the songs, there were five songwriters involved, myself, Krista Detour, Tim Grimm, Tom Rosnowski, and Michael White. And, you know, we created an album, and then it became a stage production. And it was just a ton of fun, and it was filmed by WTIU here in Bloomington, Indiana, and it was up for a regional Emmy. It was a really beautiful production they did, and it is available on their website, WTIU.
Okay, great. And then just a couple of comments. A couple of years ago, I got out all your early CDs out of the libraries, and the thing I loved about your early CDs, along with all the little personal notes and the songs, were the lyrics were all included, because I'm not that internet savvy. But and I really loved reading about how devoted you were to your daughter, and I loved the pictures of you and her on the Angel at My Shoulder album.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, indeed.
And I have your last seven albums, but looking up your early ones, which, you know, already showed a lot of insights and spirituality, gave me the bigger picture and really impressed me with the growth and maturity I see over the whole body of your work. So,
well, gosh, thank you so much. You know, there's been, gosh, I think 15 or 16 albums, and, you know, the thing about having a trail of albums behind you is that you have to become really comfortable with your growth being public. <You know? laughs> It's like, oh yeah, that's when she figured that out. But it's an interesting way to document your life through collections of songs from different time periods, and that was nice about the Kindred Spirits. Kindred Spirits is my most recent release, and it's a collection of songs over the last 12 albums that have a spiritual current to them, put out by Rounder Records. And so it was kind of nice. I mean, I don't really listen to my own albums. I'm always working on the next thing, and I listen to other people. But it was nice to go back and revisit those old albums and, remember those places and choose songs that, you know, kind of made a nice collection and overview of where I've come from and where I am, and hopefully a little bit about where I'm going. But thank you. You've been listening for quite a while, it sounds like, and I surely appreciate it.
Well, thank you, caller. We appreciate that, too. Again, this is Keeping the Faith. My name is Kyle Kroha. We're talking with Carrie Newcomer today. And I do want to remind folks that we would like you to join the conversation. Our call-in lines are open at 217-333-9455 or call us on the toll-free at 800-222-9455. That's 217-333-WILL or toll-free at 800-222-WILL. Carrie, you were talking at sort of summarizing about your trips, about how family is family and people can just recognize across cultural barriers and find the common threads and the continuities that really unite us all in a spiritual fabric, you know, regardless of our countries and our cultures. But I want to switch gears a little bit here because you've done some amazing things with regard to collaborations and workshops, and especially with regard to Parker J. Palmer and Joe Bolte Taylor. And the reason why this is kind of a switch gear is that Parker Palmer is the author of Healing the Heart of Democracy, The Courage to Create a Politics Worthy of the Human Spirit. And when I was first reading his book, I was just struck by this vibrant humanity that he had and brought to this idea of that disagreements between people should foster discussion and mutual respect and collaboration, not just dissent and destroying our enemies, and that we could use human stories to do that. And as I understand it, you do a collaborative evening with him or collaborative workshops with him, and I was wondering if you could talk to us about that.
Well, thanks. Yes, Healing the Heart of Democracy is just really a fabulous and inspiring book, and everyone should go out and get it immediately. Yeah, it's just an incredible thing, you know, when you get to meet someone that you've admired their work for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, Parker is just a favorite author, and he's inspired me for many years with his work, and you know, getting to meet him and find out he's even more amazing as a person is pretty incredible. But then to have the opportunity to do a collaborative work together, a spoken word and musical evening based on Healing the Heart of Democracy has just been just a wonderful, just incredible experience. And I've learned a lot from Parker, and every time I get a chance to work with him, I just feel, you know, beyond grateful and inspired, it's been very nice to do the collaborative works on all different kinds of levels. But Healing the Heart of Democracy is such, I think, a work for our times. It's, you know, we live in such a divisive culture and divisive times, and you know, this book talks about, you know, reclaiming our common voice, reclaiming civil discourse, and not just, you know, being tolerant of one another. Mm-hmm. You know, as Parker says, it doesn't feel so good if someone says, hey, you know, guess what, I'm being tolerant of you. No, but to really appreciate one another, appreciate, you know, what we all bring to the table. Mm-hmm. And that it's a big table. There's room for all of us. And you know, when we actually have conversations and we appreciate what each brings to the table and the stories we all bring, often we find that there are threads of connection. There's places that we have in common that help us to move forward and not be so stuck in, how we're different. So it's a very important work, and I'm very excited about it, and it really does resonate a lot with the kinds of things I write about as well. I write a lot about human growth and living authentically and finding something extraordinary in an ordinary day, and the threads of shared experience between people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was a very wonderful linking of the ideas of the book and the kinds of things that I write. And also, it was nice in terms of an evening. We do the evening together, Parker and I, and incredible pianist Gary Walters, and that I've worked with for years and years. And it's nice because it feels like a very full evening. I mean, you have spoken word and language and idea and story, and then music, which kind of comes in another part, you know, comes in through the heart, and there's storytelling throughout the night, and even places where we participate in And that's actually a very interesting idea, to create an evening experience where people are participating and not just consuming an event.
You actually have people tell each other stories, as I understand it.
Yeah, in the middle of the show, basically we stop and we have people turn to each other and tell stories. And it sounds so simple, and it's also very counterculture. We're kind of in a time period where we are consumers of entertainment and music and story, but that's relatively new in human history. And we've always told one another stories, and you know, we used to gather around the piano and sing songs after dinner, you know, and it is reclaiming something old with kind of a new twist. So it is. It's very exciting that within the show, people, you know, they participate. They become part of the show themselves.
I see. Yeah, I have a quote here actually from one of his books. From the book actually, and. He says, hearing each other's stories, which are often stories of heartbreak, can create an unexpected bond between people. When two people realize that parallel experiences lead them to contrary conclusions, they're more likely to hold their differences respectfully, knowing that they've experienced similar forms of grief. The more you know about another person's story, the less possible it is to see that person as your enemy. And I just love that quote. It just seems
beautiful
to summarize.
I'm so glad you pulled that out.
Oh, good. Because I'm still reading through the book myself. I am just so struck by, again, the humanity that he brings to this and the hope that it brings as, like, my gosh, there was a time in our culture where we could disagree and still be civil and not throw rocks at each other and be enemies. And he really gives us not just a clarion call for that, but actually an actual sort of game plan and a methodology for us to actually get where we're going.
It's not just kind of, I don't know, it's not about pie in the sky. It's a very practical book in a lot of ways, in terms of reclaiming something old with something new. And, you know, and I think in many ways this is a very hopeful book. And, it dovetailed very well with a lot of the things I write about. I write about hope on one level or another, but not hope that's, I don't see hope as being like a Hallmark card, and I don't see hope as being cotton candy or wishful thinking or just positive thinking, you know, optimism. I really see hope as being pretty gritty. It's about getting up every morning and saying, you know, I will live my life and I will work for the better world that I envision. And I may see it and I may not, but this is how I live my life and this is who I am. Rededicating to that every day. So there's a lot in this book that really talks about hope in that sense, as a hope as being about being faithful more than being about just being optimistic.
Mm-hmm. And actually having hope is making a contribution to being that one piece that contributes to the whole. And if you get enough people doing that, then you know, the sum is greater than the
And I did a show with Marcus Borg recently, and he had a great metaphor that I just love, and he said that we all have our piece of the quilt, and I really love that you know, there's a lot of sorrows in this world, and it's easy to get overwhelmed. It really is, or what can one person do, and you know, when you think of it in that way, we all have our piece of the quilt, and that our job, each one of our jobs, is to sew that piece as well as we know how, with all the love and all the gifts that we have to bring to it. It's not, you know, I don't need to sew on your piece of the quilt.
Sure.
It's not even appropriate for me to do that. I wouldn't do it as well as you do. So, you know, when all of us are contributing our piece, then it creates something larger, something wonderful, something that'll cover the whole world. So, you know, I think about that metaphor when I think about hope, and I think about, you know, what's my piece of the puzzle, and yes, there's a lot of work to be done if you're aware, if you're paying attention. There's a lot of work to be done, but You know, you can't. Oscar Romero said, "We can't do everything, but we can do something."
That's true.
So the idea is, what's my something? What's my something that I'll do today, and how will I live it today?
Exactly. Well, you know, another beautiful thing is that, Carrie, with your workshops, you actually help people find a way that they can actually knit together their pieces of the quilt. Because sometimes you know that you've got a piece of quilt, but maybe you just don't know how to sew. Or you don't know how to crochet. Or, you know, it's just, you know, something that's just pretty horrid. And we all need guidance because some of us just aren't all that gifted. We just need to be pointed. And you do have several workshops coming up this fall. And could you tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah, I do different kinds of workshops. You know, I go out and I do concerts and performances, but I also do workshops. This fall, I have a couple workshops coming up. One is a 5-day, week-long workshop at the Omega Institute, mm-hmm. which is just a beautiful place in upstate New York. And then I have a weekend retreat at Kirkridge Retreat Center mm-hmm. with Faith Kirkham Hawkins, a wonderful theologian, and we're doing a workshop based on Midrash.
Okay, what's
Midrash? Creative retelling of secret stories.
Okay. I'm not as familiar with that. So basically retelling and asking questions, or?
It's about asking questions of spiritual stories, spiritual text. Okay. Reading spiritual text with a question instead of as an answer.
Okay.
So, and we're actually very broad. It was originally a process that the Jewish rabbis used to explore and go deeper into text. But we actually think of sacred text as being a very broad. So it may be from some spiritual tradition, or it may be poetry. It may be the mm-hmm. sacred text of your own life.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's like a personal memoir.
We look at sacred text as being pretty broad. But it's about asking questions of those stories. What does that mean? And, you know, how to, and often it's envisioning.
And
new ways of looking at the story.
And seeing what they teach us.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Well, again, I just want to remind folks, we are on Keeping the Faith. My name is Kyle Kroha. We're here with Carrie Newcomer here today. Our phone lines are open at 217-333-9455 or toll-free at 800-222-9455. And that's 217-333-WILL or toll-free at 800-222-WILL. One thing I wanted to talk about, looking at the clock, I want to spend a few moments on this, and it talks about, you know, we were talking about quilts, what a nice lead into this. I call it the spiritual fabric of us, because we're all part of this spiritual fabric, this spiritual quilt. Keeping the Faith is a show about faith, spirituality, religion, ethics, and values. Anybody who's listened to the show has heard that as on our promos throughout the years. And one of the things I just love about your work, the music and the workshops and the collaborations, is that it is spiritual, but it's accessible, especially to the not only the traditional organized religion, churched demographic, but to the unchurched or the spiritual, not religious, or those who recognize life energies are out there, but they're not necessarily theistic spiritualities. And I was just wondering if you could address, what do you think these people might find in your work? And do you find many of the fans out there? And where's their place? Where's their place at the table? Where's their place at the quilt? Where do they fit in?
Well, it's interesting. I jump secular spiritual lines daily in my work, and you know I perform and I do workshops, and you know, in secular situations and with organizations, and also in spiritual organizations and interfaith organizations, and so you know I think maybe that's because I don't really see a line between the two. I'm coming out of a Quaker, an unprogrammed Quaker tradition, and that idea of finding something sacred in an ordinary day, that the sacred and the ordinary, there really isn't a line between the two. And, you know, that idea that there's something holy and sacred within each person. And so, you know, when starting from that kind of premise, when I write, there's a there's a spiritual thread in my songs because there's a spiritual thread in my life.
Sure.
If it wasn't there, if it wasn't in my songs, I would be censoring something really important about how I walk around in this world and experience it. But I write very, deliberately, inclusively, and not exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting and kind of careful and creative line to walk, because you don't want to make it so generic that it's washed out,
right?
And it doesn't have any depth to it anymore. It's not just on the surface. It needs to go deep, and at the same time, welcome anyone who's had spiritual leanings in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that spirituality is about connecting to something larger than ourselves. And some folks, that's within a traditional setting, a traditional spiritual setting. And for some of us, it's that walk in the woods. It's the flash of light, that comes through the trees. It's the first time you look at your newborn baby.
Mm-hmm.
We all have these experiences of leaning into something larger than ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Not greater, but larger. And that's what I write to. I write to those experiences. I think there's a lot of us, and I guess there's also a respect for the different forms of spiritual experience that I find it fascinating. I'm kind of a theology geek at heart. my husband says I have the lending library of, spiritual geeky like books and stuff. So, I've always been a seeker, and I've always been fascinated with, how we lean into this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as I've gotten older, I used to look for answers, and now I'm really looking for the best questions,
mm-hmm.
It's the question I'm after, the right question,
mm-hmm.
to keep asking and then asking again. We live busy lives. We live very busy lives, and it's easy. It's so easy to not be present, in our own life.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm here, when I'm present, I start to see miracles. I see them everywhere. I can't hardly help it. I see them everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I start to ask the good questions, those good questions that you ask again and again. What do I love? When I pull back all those distractions, what's at the heart of my life?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you think are the most important questions that we need to be asking at this point?
Well, I think that's individual for each person.
Yeah, it would be, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, and but some of those questions come back, one of the question that comes back to me is, what do I love?
Mm-hmm.
What do you love?
Mm-hmm.
What's at the heart of your life?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
how do you lean farther into that?
Mm-hmm. And what provides the context that makes you who you are?
Mm-hmm.
And I see. So, one of the things, again, that I've noted about your career, and especially I find it just so interesting because so much of it was also developed really before the internet took off. You're in Southern Indiana, and yet you have this international base. And, what freedoms and limitations have you found? You didn't go to the cultural meccas of, Boston or Nashville or, NYC, mm-hmm. or different places like that. Do you find certain freedoms or limitations by being based out of Central Indiana? And, what strategies have worked best for creating that spiritual and career space for you?
Well, that's a great question. I'm gonna zip back for just a second.
Sure, absolutely.
That idea of reaching across in terms of different spiritual traditions. I had a conversation with a wonderful Quaker in Ramallah in Palestine, about 3 weeks ago, and she said that when you start talking from dogma down, if you get together and you're trying to have conversation, you're working dogma down,
mm-hmm.
you get stuck immediately. Her name is Jean Zaru, amazing woman.
Jean
Zaru. But if you work values up, what are our shared values? What are the things that we most deeply love and hold true, and then we take action there.
Sure.
That's where the conversation starts, and that's where any kind of progress forward ever happens, is when we come values up instead of dogma down. But anyways, back to your question. You know, I am from the middle of Indiana, and I didn't start in one of the music meccas. And I think in some ways, you know, if you're in the arts, you know, I think my story is more in keeping with what's going on right now, with the advent of the internet and the music industry changing like every day now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the old music business pipelines are gone now. And people are doing all kinds of interesting new creative ways to let folks know what they're doing as artists. I started out, I was in the middle of Indiana, and I thought, you know, I'm going to be a singer-songwriter from the middle of Indiana, you know. But for many reasons, I was based here. And so I had to be
sure.
creative about it.
Sure.
I had to think, okay, you know, what are my resources here, and be creative and be brave and take risk, and I did, and some things worked and some things didn't work. I think in terms of pros and cons, you know, the good part was that I developed something pretty unique. You know, I wasn't chasing the most recent, thing that made it big on the top 10, you know, because that just wasn't going to work for me.
Mm-hmm.
I had to really dig deep into what is it that I do, and not just writing songs, but what do I write songs about, and follow that, and follow, you know, where that community might be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think right now that's a lot of what's happening, with, especially with young artists who are just starting now, that, you know, they're looking for those different places where communities are open to the kinds of art, the kind of music that they're doing, that we're using the internet, we're using, you know, just this whole new range, video and online concerts. And, I mean, there's a lot of ways that people are getting their music, getting their art out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and who knows what's going to happen and how what it's going to look like in 5 years,
sure.
because it's all shifting. But I guess I think sometimes I'll go to colleges and I work with students who are thinking about vocation. And, you know, and vocation, I think, is very much in line with the Buechner quote, that true vocation is when the soul's deep gladness meets the world's great need.
Mm.
And, you know, what is it that you love? And lean that way. You know, vocation is the thing that you cannot not do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the closer we get to the things that we truly love, that we truly are, the more potent our work becomes.
Mm-hmm.
And that is possible. I mean, I think I'm living proof, you know, that...
sure.
But it might not be the image that you first had in mind, and that's often what I tell students. If I thought that the only way to have a successful, satisfying life in music would have been to be the next Beyonce,
oh my,
I would have bagged this a long time ago. I had to open the frame of what it meant to have, you know, a really satisfying, passionate life as an artist and a musician and a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to follow different avenues,
sure.
to follow what the songs were about.
Sure.
And, you know, it led to a very different kind of career than that first image might have been and what we first think of.
Sure. And would you also say that, okay, for those of us who aren't maybe necessarily as artistically gifted, you know, there's art in everything. There's art in engineering. There's art in, there's art in, you know, accounting. I mean, I'm not as familiar myself, but clearly those who know and have their passion and their love for it and who lean in toward that sort of, that particular discipline, I think we can learn a lot from the artists who have always had to find a way to, you know, make their existence plus be able to make their art. And especially with the economy and now, it seems that the artists can lead us not only in terms of teaching us about art and good things like that, but also teaching us about how to manifest that which is our passion, and so that we can lean toward it and actually make our best life because of it.
Yeah, and I think you're right. You know, and kind of going back to the beginning, that thank goodness we're not all exactly the same. We all have different gifts, and we all have different things that we love. We love by nature. We lean into, and that's actually a very exciting thing to me, that we all have something contribute. But it may be a situation where you have to open the frame of what it is that you do and what you love. Artists, it's not set up very well in our culture for the artist. So most of us have had to be creative about the frame.
Sure.
We're very much feeling the insecure economic times that, you know, we're in right now as well. But maybe in terms of the artists, we've kind of always had to be creative, be willing to open the frame, like I said. I think there is something there. When I go to colleges and I talk to students and I talk to them about vocation, you know, I remember one young woman being pretty angry at me once and saying, "Hey, you know, it costs a lot. It costs a lot to follow your heart. You know, it might not work." And I said, "That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. It costs a lot to follow your heart, but it costs a whole lot more not to."
To not, indeed.
Yeah, and it's different kinds of cost. So, you know, and I think that's one of those things about leaning into what you love and where your heart is. Because, you know, I didn't go to college for music. Mm-hmm. I actually went to college for visual art.
Sure.
Because, you know, I was chalking up all the secure professions, you know, visual art, check, you know,
sure,
folk singing, check. just lining
sure
them up.
Sure.
But I didn't go to college for music because I wasn't ready to risk what I loved the most yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it took me a little while to get ready to risk what I really loved the most. Because if it didn't work out, it would actually mean something.
What do you think that turning point was for you?
It was the thing I could not do.
Okay.
You know, I think for me, music was going to keep tugging on my sleeve, was tapping on my shoulder. There's, you know, I tell people that, you know, when I was growing up, okay, we all have things that, you know, we've always loved to do that. You know, when you do something and 2 hours later you come up for air, you know, it's like
sure,
you've lost all track of time because you're just so into it.
Sure.
And for me, even when I was a little kid, my favorite game in the world was a game called Making Something. You know? What are you doing, Carrie? Making something, you know? I was making songs and I was making stories and I was making pictures and I was making.
You were creating.
And you know what? I'm still, all these years later, I'm so happy when I'm making something. You know, when I'm in the process of writing a song, when I'm in that zone, and I'm there, and those moments when I step back, you know, a couple hours later, and I know I participated, but I wasn't alone in the process of creating. You know, that for me, you know, that's the closest I'll ever get to communion.
Wow.
in this life.
Wow.
So, you know, it was the thing I could not do.
Yeah.
And so I had to follow it, but I just didn't know what it was going to look like.
Sure, sure, sure. I think you were saying that wasn't at career day when you were in high school or in college.
Okay. No. Think about junior high school career day. All the careers that they had on the chalkboard that you could be, you know, like you could be a doctor, you could be a lawyer, you could be a teacher, you could, you know, be a plumber, all these things you could, you know, traveling folk singer with a spiritual current wasn't on the chalkboard on junior high school career day.
So, well, I'll tell you, Carrie, we're so glad that you found this, because you have so enriched our lives. There have been many songs that you've written that have provided a wonderful soundtrack, and sometimes they were songs I actually clung to at different times that really helped me get through a lot of things. And I know I speak for a lot of different people when I say that. And everybody's got a different song, because obviously different people are different pieces of the quilt, but you provide us so many different things and so many different gifts to work at. And we just thank you for that. I do want to ask you, what's upcoming for you? What, you know, looking forward, you know, leaning into moving forward, what's upcoming for you? What's going to be occupying your attentions and days forthcoming? I know you've got some workshops planned. You've got a new album, I think, that you're going to go in and work on. Any clues about what that's going to look like? And what would you like us to know?
I'm really excited. I am going back to the studio in November.
Super.
With a new producer, Paul Mayhern, who I'm very excited about working with. And I've kind of waited a little longer than usual between albums for this one. And I'm just excited about this collection and looking forward to working on that. You know, the workshops, I am doing a week-long workshop, which is I don't often do songwriting workshops that are a full week. So for people who are, you know, into going deeper into the topic. You know, I'm doing a wonderful collaboration with Jill Bolte Taylor in Washington State, which is on my website, who is the neuroanatomist who wrote the incredible book, My Stroke of Insight. And we're doing a program together out there and doing some wonderful work with environmentalist Scott Sanders and more work with Parker. So I feel like, you know, I'm so grateful. I have a practice of every night before I go to sleep at night, I say out loud three things I'm grateful for. And sometimes they're big, and sometimes, you know, I'm so grateful I get to work with Parker today, or I'm so grateful that, you know, I have a dog. You know, big and small, but it seems like, you know, in the last while, I just can't stop at three.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
I just keep on. And then I'm grateful for pancakes, and then I'm grateful for, you know, and on and on and on. And so I'm very excited about the new album. If people are interested in finding out more about some of the collaborations I'm doing, about the new album, and also about community who are talking about these topics, I do have a Facebook page.
I was going to mention.
And it's really a wonderful community. I resisted Facebook for a while, but I really love the idea of creating a page where we can throw out topics, we can talk about these things in a safe context, because, you know, this particular community of people take seriously that, you know, everyone's opinion needs to be respected and no flaming. And, you know, but really supporting one another in conversation. So folks are interested. I do have a blog and Tumblr, and I do put up essays and poetry.
Yeah, definitely. No, and, you know, we so appreciate, I was just going to say, we have all these resources that you so generously provide us. I'm just looking at the clock here. You know, we're having to finish up this hour. And we have just spent the hour with Carrie Newcomer, international singer-songwriter, activist, and collaborator. We do want to make you aware that her latest CD, Kindred Spirits, is available at the Carrie Newcomer store at www.carrienewcomer.com. There are tons of links and details available there. It's one of the most beautiful websites I've ever seen. So many resources there. And do check out her Speed of Soul blog at tumblr.com. And again, the terrific Facebook community. I think the Spirit of Soul discussion happens there every Wednesday. And Carrie, we are so appreciative that you are here this afternoon with us.
Oh, thank you. It's been great having a conversation with you.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, I'd also like to thank Mike Pritchard for his time and expertise as tech director here today. And also thanks to Steve Shoemaker. He'll be back next week, August 18th, with a conversation with Professor Jane Koontz on her translation of the book Islam and the Challenge of Civilization. And do keep in mind, the last Keep in the Faith show will be on August 25th. I'm Kyle Crowa, and thank you for listening to Keep in the Faith.
This American Life with Ira Glass is straight ahead here on WILL AM 580 and WILL FM 90.9 HD3 Urbana and streaming online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Jason Croft with you this Sunday night. Then in an hour at 7, it's To the Best of Our Knowledge. in the first part of the program, a show titled The Beast in Me, and then the second hour at 8, Extraordinary Minds. New Dimensions comes your way at 9, and Harry Shearer's Le Show is here at 10.